Seattle's Morning News, and next week will mark the 75th anniversary of D-Day, the Allied landings at Normandy. This music from the movie The Longest Day, which documented that. It was the beginning of the liberation of France and the eventual defeat of Nazi Germany, and historian Felix Bonnell is here with a look back at how the home front experience of D-Day was unique along the West Coast. He's brought to us by the King County Library System.
Yeah, so D-Day, it's June 6, 1944, landing on the northern coast of France, tens of thousands of troops and tens of thousands of pieces of equipment put ashore, easily the greatest military operation in the history of mankind. With this year being the 75th anniversary, it's probably the greatest commemorative operation in the history of mankind coming up next week all over the world. There's stuff happening in the States, there's stuff happening in France. But before all that happens, I always like to pause every D-Day anniversary and recall the role that radio, a medium that's near and dear to our hearts here at Cairo, of course, played in D-Day, both on the ground in France, but also here at home, especially on the West Coast, which is the cool wrinkle about this story. So here's what Cairo radio was playing sometime after 9:30 p.m. on the night of Monday, June 5th, 1944.
And now CBS presents the music of Lenny Kahn and his orchestra from the Hollywood Palladium on Sunset Boulevard in the heart of the nation's film capital.
So sort of standard radio fare, just late at night music playing. That was on the West Coast, and the first word that D-Day might be underway came at 9:48 Pacific time, which is almost 1 a.m. on the East Coast. And so this earliest bulletin was based on reports being picked up on the German radio service. American announcers cautioned listeners that this was unofficial word, but there was so much anticipation for D-Day, the radio networks began operating as if it was a real deal, called all their staff in New York, and they were operating around the clock. But the cool thing about the timing of this announcement, it was early enough to still catch most people on the West Coast awake, and late enough to be missed by most people east of the Rockies. And there's news reports at the time that suggested a lot of West Coast people stayed up to find out what was going to happen next, while everyone east of the Mountain Time Zone or east of the Rockies were asleep. And so the official announcement, the word that it really was underway, came at 12:32 a.m. Pacific time on the morning of June 6, 1944.
Under the command of General Eisenhower, Allied naval forces, supported by strong air forces, began landing Allied armies this morning on the northern coast of France.
That's a guy named Colonel R. Ernest Dupuy. I love his old school accent. You don't hear that much on the radio anymore.
No, you don't.
And to me, that little short announcement there, that is so fraught. That's like the Gettysburg Address and the Paul Revere ride all rolled into one moment in the middle of the 20th century. So from that point on, CBS and NBC were wall-to-wall for hours. CBS did present a lot of its regular programming during the day, mostly soap operas. They took heat for it later on. NBC stayed with the news. Anyway, all the networks cooperated in advance of D-Day to pool their efforts and share whatever reporting came in, including some pre-recorded material, like this message to the troops from General Dwight D. Eisenhower.
Soldiers, sailors, and airmen of the Allied Expeditionary Force, you are about to embark upon the great crusade toward which we have striven these many months. The eyes of the world are upon you. The hopes and prayers of liberty-loving people everywhere march with you. In company with our brave allies and brothers in arms on other fronts, you will bring about the destruction of the German war machine, the elimination of Nazi tyranny over the oppressed peoples of Europe, and security for ourselves in a free world.
So that was played to troops before they got on their landing craft and everything, but then the American radio networks had that to play as well. So there's no live eyewitness reporting of D-Day, but there were a few reporters along on the invasion who had very crude early recording equipment. This next thing we're going to hear is an excerpt from a reporter named George Hicks. He was aboard an American ship just off the beach as the landings were beginning. The recording was hustled back to England and then played on all American radio networks at the same time. It's a little hard to understand exactly what he says, but he's describing some airplanes and things, and I think you can actually hear the sound of the Spitfires and P-38s flying overhead.
The Spitfires on our starboard bow. P-38 dead ahead. The air support. Here comes four P-38s now, following the fort. The air has simply been crisscrossed with the live displays of all types. The earlier and smaller LCVTs, which carry infantry and personnel, have been en route now over 40 minutes, and according to the time schedule, should be hitting the French shore in 10 minutes from now.
Boy, war sounds different when it's not accompanied by a soundtrack. Yeah. I mean, it just reminds you, it's just a bunch of people sailing in the motoring in those open boats to an open beach. And I know the Nazis were decimated at the time. I mean, they didn't have as many defenses thanks to the decoy operations. But at some of the beaches, they were just withering bullet fire at them.
Oh, yeah. No, it was a bloody operation, and thousands of people died on that very first day. 2,000 to 4,000 people died on the first day of the whole invasion of Europe. But what's amazing about that report, we take for granted seeing these live correspondents, you know, ducking in the hotel in Baghdad or whatever. But that's incredible. That's a few hours after the fact of a live description or live recorded description of an Allied invasion of Europe. That's like, that would have been really radical to hear that on the radio in the States back in 1944. I don't want to lose sight of that. Now, this West Coast D-Day radio phenomenon, this notion that we here on the West Coast experience it differently, it's been studied a little bit by scholars, but I think Bob Hope really sums it up best. He did his show on June 6th. It was over on Como. He was on NBC. He pretty much sums up the whole West Coast perspective as he lived it there at home with Dolores in Toluca Lake.
What's happened during these last few hours, not one of us will ever forget. How could you forget? You sat up all night by the radio and heard the bulletins, the flashes, the voices coming across from England, the commentators, the pilots returning from their greatest of all missions, newsboys yelling in the street, and it seemed that one world was ending and a new world beginning. The sun came up and you sat there looking at that huge black headline, that one great black word with the exclamation point, invasion.
So it's an incredible anniversary, obviously, for what Americans and Allies did to put an end to World War II, but then how the American media brought that home to the American people to feel like they were part of it. Because everybody had a dog in the fight. Everybody had somebody they were related to or who they knew who was part of this. So it's a big anniversary. We'll have more on it next week. I'm actually going to hop over and be in Normandy for the 75th anniversary, and I'll be reporting back.
Starring Felix Bunnell every Wednesday on Seattle's Morning News. We recorded that last week, so Felix is on his way now. And we talked a little bit about it. It was 20... years ago, I was dropping my daughter off at her junior year abroad. We had done some other things in England, so we decided to take the train to France. So we rented a little farmhouse up in wasn't Normandy; it was the next one over. Now I already forget. But we then rented a car and drove to Normandy just to see all the beaches at Arromanches and Pointe du Hoc. And it is I still have trouble talking about it without choking up because of the spectacle of the number of people who died in just a few hours in that invasion. It was a successful invasion, and some beaches were easier than others, but to stand at the top of Pointe du Hoc, which is basically a sheer cliff, it's much like you'd see here in the Puget Sound region along the coastline, and look at the gun emplacements, and to think that these were basically teenagers using ropes to scale this cliff while they're being fired down on. It's just, it brushes you back, you know,
to
go up there and look at that.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing to me. It's one of the places that I've wanted to go to experience that. It's truly amazing what they pulled off.
And they still and the thing is when you go to a place like Saint Marie Eglise, which is one of the little towns on the way when the soldiers landed, there is a steady parade of older and older veterans who go there and are received still as war heroes by the French community there, and still I guess it's still there. The one church where the paratrooper in that famous scene gets stuck on the corner of the church, they have a mannequin hanging there with the parachute on the church, you know, so you know this is the place you've been looking for.